Accession number 9423, Reel 2.
Could you continue to describe the huts at Clipston?
Well, they were ordinary huts, 30 by 18. With
30 feet by 18?
Yeah, 30 feet by 18, with beds on both sides. And we had a great big fire in the middle, so it was very warm. And we had our meals in the hut too. People used to go to the cookhouse and bring our meals, and we used to have them in the hut.
With the tables there, yes?
The tables in the hut, so we didn't have to all queue in for meals. Somebody was detailed every day. One of us was detailed to go and get the food from the cookhouse, and he would bring it along and serve it out and take all the stuff back. That would be his job for the day, sort of thing.
Roughly speaking, how many men were in each hut?
About 20, roughly.
Did you know any of these men from your previous battalion?
Yes, two or three of them came from us, came with me. Three, as a matter of fact, three others.
Right, could you describe what food you were given whilst you were there?
At Clipston. Oh, we used to have proper, good cooked food. Good stews and all that sort of thing. Bacon and all that sort of thing. Far better than it was at Harwich. Mm. Of course, the cooking facilities were probably much better, you know.
How many meals a day did you get?
Three. Breakfast, lunch and tea.
Was there any way you could supplement the food there?
Well, the canteen was always there. Naffy, what they call a naffy. You could go and buy cakes and things in a naffy.
Was there any entertainment available for you there as well?
I don't think I can remember very much of it now. No entertainment, no. Not at Mansfield, nor even at Harwich.
Fine, and perhaps we could look at the washing arrangements and cleaning arrangements and so on.
Well, they had washhouses and bathhouses and all that sort of thing. Shower baths. At Clipston. It was a proper organised camp.
Mm. The hot water easily available? Or you had
to always on tap, hot water on tap, yes.
Mm. And what about the latrines?
Well, they were proper latrines, flush latrines. Mm. But not at Harwich. They were in open ditches in Harwich at the time when I was there.
Could you tell me something about the sort of machine gun that you were using?
Well, when we first went to Harwich, we were regarded as fully trained soldiers, so we didn't have to do any foot drill. All we had to do was learn all there was to know about a machine gun. And during the course of our training, we learnt how to dismantle it, assemble it, fire it, do it all in the dark, do everything that was possible you could do with a machine. We learnt all about it. We knew everything there was to know about a machine gun. Everybody. On a machine gun, there's supposed to be a crew of six. One man fires it, another man loads it, and you, the four people, assist. But everybody can do the job. Everybody can take over. It's not one man who's permanently firing a machine gun. It can be done by any one of the six, you see. So everybody had the same kind of training. We did it night and day, day after day, the same old thing, until we actually knew we could do it. If we were drunk, we could have done it.
Yes. What gun did you use?
It was a Vickers gun.
Could you describe it?
Well, Vickers Mark something. I don't know what mark it was, but it was the same gun that was used on the Western Front. It's even used in the Army now, the same gun, the same type of gun. It was a water-cooled gun, fired about 600 rounds a minute, and it was fed by means of a belt. And it was mounted on a tripod. And the action of the gun was that when the first round is fired, the gases from the explosion force back a piston, which interlocks with some mechanism, which reloads the gun, excludes the empty cartridge, and puts another cartridge in position, all in one do, all caused by the action of the gas on the piston. And then a spring in it that brings the piston back into its original position.
How many rounds per minute could it fire?
Well, it's said to fire 600 rounds a minute. It's effective at about 2,000 yards.
Could you go into a little bit more detail about the different jobs there were on the gun, as it were?
Well, there was supposed to be a number one. He was the man who carried a tripod on his shoulder. He would go forward and assemble the tripod. It was a thing that had three legs that could be adjusted. And then the number two was the man who carried the gun, and he would put the gun on the tripod, and the other people would bring up the ammunition boxes, and the number two would open the ammunition box, get out the belt and feed it into the gun, and the other people would do other things. One would carry a can of water, because they had to have a tube run from the outer casing of the barrel, which was filled with water, to condense the steam, so that if the enemy saw the steam going up, they would know there was a machine gun there. So they had a tube that ran into a bucket of water to condense the steam. One would carry that, another would carry the bucket. Other people would carry spare rounds and all sorts of things. Carry anything that was necessary.
You say you learned to fire the machine gun at night. How did you do that?
Well, we did it at night time. We were all blindfolded first. We did it in daylight with blindfolds on. We could assemble or reassemble the gun with a blindfold on, you know, and do all that. You see, a gun could stop for four various reasons. They used to call them the stoppages. It was a number one, two, three, and four. And you could tell by the position of the starting handle what was wrong with the gun. For instance, if it was in one position, it would mean it had got no ammunition. If it was in number two, it could mean something else. It could mean that the lock had got jammed, or if it was in number three, it could mean anything.
So can you remember the other two?
I can't remember the. I know one was no ammunition. One was the lock was jammed.
What was the lock?
Well, the lock was the thing that the piece of mechanism that organised the replenishment of the guns and all that stuff. I can't remember what exactly they were, but I know there was four, and you could tell what they were by just looking at that, and you'd know what to do right away. So you do all that in the dark, feel it and all that sort of thing, and then you take us out on the ranges at night time and fire at night time.
Was there any way of precautions to so that the actual flare from the gun at night could be concealed?
That's another thing. We used to, when we were in France, we used to fire at night regularly, and used to fire through a wet blanket, and that was one thing. And then they had a hood that they used to put on the muzzle of the gun. But I never seen these hoods. But where were we? We used to fire through a wet blanket.
Was that something you picked up over there? Were you told that whilst you were still being trained?
No, we were told that while I was in training. Yes. Mm.
What equipment did you have to carry as well as the machine gun?
All your own equipment, pack and all that sort of thing. The numbers 3 and 4 could be converted into ordinary infantrymen with the equipment they had. The rifle, bayonet, ammunition, everything.
Did you have to actually carry your rifle as well as the machine gun itself?
No, the people who carried the machine gun on the trip, they used to have revolvers. They didn't have a rifle. We didn't. We used to change over, you know. Mm-hmm.
Were they of senior rank, or were they all the
no,
same?
No. Sometimes there might be a lad corporal in charge with it.
Did you find the machine gun a reliable weapon?
Yeah. Well, they do say that the artillery was king of the battlefield. The artillery was the king, the machine gun was the queen. It was the most devastating weapon, yes. Mm.
Did it actually break down very often, or was it rare to have
it? It was most reliable. No, it would break down after a lot of use. I mean, if you fired 4 or 5 or 6 belts, it would get hot, you know, and all that sort of thing.
How did you deal with that? Did you
have to let it cool down a little bit or something like that? Or fire it, keep on firing, and let it destroy itself.
Did you ever see an instance where that occurred?
I have, yes.
What happened to the gun?
Well, I've seen people where they've had to fire the gun incessantly, non-stop, for a long, long period until it just jammed up, and they'd had to leave it, unless they could get another barrel or something like that, you know.
Was it easy to get spares for the gun when you were actually in the line?
Not very easy up the line, but they were available.
Right, could you tell me what else you did at Clipston Camp apart from this work on the machine gun?
Absolutely nothing whatever at all. We didn't do any training of any kind. We didn't go on parades or anything. Only that we used to fall in the morning and go to the place where the machine guns were, and we did it that often. As I say, we could have done it when we were drunk. It wasn't a case of just, oh, that's the machine gun, that's that, and you're finished. We had a thorough good grounding about it.
Mm-hmm. How long did the training last, though, at Pitson?
Well, I think I was there about, might have been a month or 6 weeks, I don't remember exactly.
And then what happened when the training had finished?
Well, we move off to Belton Park for what they call intensive training, which was the same sort of thing, only more of it.
Oh, I see. In what sense was there more of it?
Well, we used to do more route marches at Belton Park and more operations together, you know, combined operations. See, at Clipston Camp, they taught us to fire and use and manipulate the gun. But at Belton, we were involved in sort of operations.
Tactical exercise.
That's the sort of thing, yes.
Can you remember any of them?
Yeah, we used to go out with a machine gun, with the limbers, you know, the lorries with them, and supposed to attack a place and set up all the guns and go through the motions. And other times we would go to a place where we were supposed to be being attacked, and we used to have to defend it, that sort of thing, you know.
How would these simulations take place? Was one,
well,
part,
they,
one part
they,
of
they would be there would be other people involved, you know. It wouldn't be just us. There would be a sort of brigade operation there, where several infantrymen would be trying to attack a certain point, and we would be on the other side doing our little bit of stuff. It would all be combined, you know. It wouldn't be set up explicitly for us or explicitly for the infantry. It would all be combined together, you know.
Did you find these exercises of use later on?
Of course, yes. Yes, indeed.
In what way do you think they helped you?
Well, we learned to find out what the other people were doing, you know. We got the idea that we weren't entirely alone, that we were a part of a group of people, that, you know, our responsibilities were shared.
Did you have to do a lot of marching about or working in rough terrain at that
point? Yes, around Belton Park we did a lot of marching about there. We really got trained to it there.
How long were you at Belton Park for?
No, I can't tell you that exactly. About a couple of months, I should think. I don't know. I've got no record of it at all.
Was accommodation very different at Belton Park?
Much the same as at Clipston Camp. The only thing, we used to go to a dining room to dine. There were more recreational facilities at both Belton. There was a big billiard room, massive one, biggest I've ever seen in my life, that sort of thing, you know. And there was concerts and things like that.
What sort of concerts were provided?
Well, local amateurs used to come along and sing songs and all that sort of thing. Some would come along and sing Rose of Shalimar or something like that.
Can you remember anything else about the entertainments that you enjoyed there?
No, and there was concerts two or three a week.
Would you go along to those regularly?
Well, they were quite handy, yes.
Apart from that, what else was there to do in your free time?
Nothing. Write a letter home, clean your equipment, talk about your past life and your hopes for the future.
Was it near a local town?
I can't remember Belton Park, but I don't think I ever went out there. I used to go out at Clipson down into Mansfield, but I don't remember ever going out at Belton Park. It seemed a remote place. I've been there since. It's all pulled down now. It's a big estate.
Okay, can we then look at what's happened to you after your training at Belston Park is finished?
Well, we just went off to France.
Can you remember actually the preparations for that and the news?
No,
that you
were, we just had our names up on the board there, the party. Well, we were what they call a nucleus company at Belton Park.
What does that mean?
A nucleus. Well, it means a part of a nucleus of something. A beginning of something. We hadn't got a particular name or number. I think it was a number so-and-so nucleus company machine gun called Belton Park. Well, it names come on orders, and we just got ready and we marched to the station and off we went to Folkestone. Mm.
Well, can you remember your reaction to seeing your name?
I was very pleased. I think we were going. Yes. Mm. Yeah, I was anyway.
By that time, had you any idea what to expect?
Oh, we knew what to expect, yes.
How did you come to know what to expect?
We'd seen people who'd been out there. People in the camp had been out there. People with one leg and all that sort of thing, you know.
Did you have much opportunity to talk to them?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And what sort of things had they told you?
Oh, they told us it was terrible and all that sort of thing, but it's like water on a duck's back, it didn't fall on us. We were soldiers, we wanted to be there. You know, we had the attitude that it won't happen to us, you know, that sort of thing.
Looking back, did you think your training was adequate for what you had to face?
It was, as far as I was concerned, yes, indeed.
Did you feel confident yourself when you were leaving that you were, you know, well placed to do your best?
Well, that sort of thing never occurred to us. I just regarded myself as one of an army that was going up to war, and had no particular feelings about my own ability at all.
What about the general esprit de corps of the men you were with? Would you say that was
high? Oh, they were all full of euphoria. They were all glad they were going. Yeah. Nobody was crying.
You say that the unit that you were in had a sort of a close-knit identity and sort of...
No, the unit that I was in wasn't actually a unit that operated in France. When we went to France, we were put into the machine gun corps depot, all split up.
Did that worry you at all, the fact that, you know, you weren't going to be with these people from
France? Oh, we knew we weren't going to be together. We didn't go out as a unit, we went out as a draft. Yeah, but we're all from this nucleus company in Belton Park. Yeah, we're all, you know, we all went out together, but we're all separate, if you follow what I mean.
Yes, I do.
We weren't going out as a unit, we went out as a draft, a separate draft. Mm-hmm.
Did you try and resolve to stick with some of your friends?
Well, yes, I had a friend of mine who I didn't join up with him, but I met him at Harwich. He was underage, and we stuck together right until he went out of the line with it wounded.
Yeah. So you were able to do that, were you, when ultimately you were out?
It could be done, yes.
Okay, well, we can perhaps return to that later when it actually happened. Yeah. Can you remember your journey to France?
Yes, I've got a door in my kit now. I've got a letter card I wrote to my mother from Folkestone, but I got no date on it. Didn't put the date down. Just a letter card saying we were in these houses in Folkestone and we were going over the following morning. I can remember that very well. Shorncliffe it was, in these houses. We went straight down from Belton Park down to Shorncliffe.
By train.
Stayed the night in these empty houses. Next morning we marched down to the quay at Folkestone and over to France, to Boulogne.
Was this ferry just for foot soldiers? Was there anything else being loaded at the time?
I don't know whether it was only for foot soldiers, but I can't remember seeing anything else there. I didn't see any horses or any equipment going on there. We just walked up the boat, and that was it.
What was your accommodation on the boat for that journey?
Standing up. I think we stood up all the way.
Were you actually on deck? Or
no, down below.
Was it very cramped?
Very crowded it was. Very crowded.
Was there any provision for giving out
nothing
food
at all? We never had anything at all. It was only on about a couple of hours or so.
Well, even though the journey was short, were you given any instructions about lifeboat drill or anything like that?
No, never had anything at all.
Were you aware of the danger of submarines?
Yes, we knew that there were submarines about, and we knew they had a destroyer escort, and we didn't really bother about it. I didn't, anyway. It never struck me that I was in any danger.
And what happened when you arrived in Boulogne?
Ah, well, we just walked off the boat, marched up St. Martin's Hill. You've probably heard about that, St. Martin's Camp. Went into tents, had a good meal. Next morning, we all got into lorries. We went to a place called Camiers, or Camier, whatever you like to call it, which is the machine gun corps depot. It's nearly Torquay. And I stayed there until I went up the line.
How long were you there at Camier?
Now then, I should think about 3 or 4 days. But I could have stopped there a long, long time, because we found out what went on. You see, every morning, everybody falling on parade, and somebody would come along and said, I want 6 men for the 15th Division, or something like that, and 6 men would go forward, or 1 man for this. If you didn't step forward, you didn't go. You could stop there as long as you liked. Anyhow, I got in with half a dozen chaps in my tent, and we all agreed that if he wanted 6 men, we'd go. So when he called out 6 men for the 24th Division, we went. I think it was there about 3 days. We wanted to get up the land.
Well, what were conditions like at that camp?
At Comiers? Oh, they were reasonable. They were like an ordinary camp. Bell tents. Didn't do anything at all during the day. Just hung around the place. Good food. Not bad at all. No, I'm surprised that people stopped there.
Why did you say you were surprised that people stopped there?
Well, I mean, it was good there. I suppose the people who didn't volunteer to go up the land were people who'd had a dose of it and, you know, kept away from it as far as they could. But to us young chaps, it was the thing. We had to go, see? So that's the way they did it.
So that after 3 days, then, you were attached to the 24th Division, did you say?
No. After 3 days, I'd been there. We put our hands up and said we would go to the 24th Division. And that same day, we went to ETAPS, you've heard of ETAPS, where we drew a rifle and bayonet and all that sort of thing. And then the next morning, we went ETAPS again and went up the line by rail.
By rail. Mm-hmm. That was the six of you together, was it?
All the six of us, yes.
And did you know your destination at that point?
No, not at all. We didn't know where the division was. We know we were going to a place called Perron. We went to Perron. We arrived there one night. We all smashed to bits there. We could hear the guns and see the flashes. We thought we were there, you know. Next morning, we went to Roiselle, a place called Roiselle, which is quite near. And there, we joined our unit at Roiselle.
And what unit were you
put in? I went into the 17th Company with my mate, and the other chaps went into the other four companies. There were four companies. They went. I never saw them anymore.
What time was this, by the way?
Well, I can't recall it exactly, but it was in the very, very early part of 1918, probably sometime in February.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to you next, then?
Well, after I joined our unit at Roiselle, we left Roiselle and went to a place called Burns, B-E-R-N-E-S, Burns, where we stayed there probably for about a fortnight.
Then what were you doing there in Burns?
Nothing at all, just hanging around.
Can you remember what your feelings were at this time?
Well, we knew the war was on. We could hear the shells bursting, you know, the guns going, and we thought, well, we'll soon be there and all that sort of thing. And then we moved up the line, into the line itself. And my unit, the 17th, went to a place called Jeancourt, Little John. That was our battle station where we were now.
I see. Can you tell me which sector of the front Jeancourt was in?
Well, it lay between Perron and Saint-Quentin. Lay between there.
Okay.
Just the precise location, I can tell you.
Right, and what was your first impression of the front when you saw it?
Well, it's amazing, you see. We went up there, marching on from our place at Burns, and I thought, well, we went through deserted villages and couldn't see a sound of the war, and we went on and on and on, and finally we stopped at a little village called Jeancourt, and we went down to we turned to the right down a sunken road, and the officer said, well, this is it. There was no troops about, no trenches. We were occupying a sunken road. We were occupying a lip facing the enemy, you know. There was nobody else there except a trench mortar battery. They were up the road, and we shared a dugout with them. And we were able to walk about in daylight, in broad daylight.
Because this was a sunken road.
No, on the top of the sunken road, we could walk about. The enemy, we couldn't see them. They must have been a mile away or more. At that particular point, from the lip of the sunken road, the terrain ran down into a valley, then it ran up into a ridge, and the enemy were not to be seen. They were on the other side of the ridge. We didn't see them. We could walk about there, no sign of anything, no artillery firing, nothing at all.
Was there no evidence of battle at all?
None whatsoever. It was as quiet can be. It was a very, very badly defended area. This was an area where the British had taken over from the French, you know. I don't know what it was, something to do with leaving there, I don't know what it was. But there were no trenches there. They were all marked out in tape. They were going to be dug, but they weren't dug. And all that was there was redoubts, sunken roads, fortified villages, all that sort of thing. Nicely arranged fields of fire. but no trenches.
Yes, what do you mean by fortified villages?
Well, they were all villages, broken down villages. The houses were probably made into, you know, good machine gun emplacements or something like that.
Were the houses still in a good state of repair?
No, they were all broken down, absolutely. In ruins.
Who'd done that? Would that be German shelling?
Well, no, this was an area of ground which the Germans had given up when they retreated the Hindenburg line. You might know that. They gave up a lot of ground to shorten their line and make the they destroyed all the villages before they went, you see. They made sure they were no use to anybody. Plus shelling and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, they were destroyed by the Germans when they gave up this ground to the Hindenburg line.
And you mentioned good fields of fire. What do you mean by that?
Well, you can get a gun in a position where you can't see anybody, and you can get a gun in a position where you can see lots of things. A field of fire is the area in which a gun can operate over.
Would you say that the British had the tactical advantage in that situation?
British? Well, they would they would think they had, you see. They would have these guns in positions where natural obstacles wouldn't interfere with their range of fire. And there would be certain areas where the Germans would have to come. I mean, if it was a lot of rock stuff, they wouldn't probably come over the rocks. Or if there was wire, they would have to find an avenue through the wire, and the guns would be directed on a certain area in the wire which the Germans would have to use. Otherwise, they'd have to climb over the wire. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
Yes. So, I meant at Gignecourt. Were the British, would you say, in an advantageous position?
At Gignecourt, we were in the battle zone. In front of us, there was a... What was the other zone? There was another zone in front of us, I think. And I don't know what they had. Much the same as we had, you know, redoubts and holes in the ground, but no actual trenches like there were which we occupied when we were, at Loos, for instance. So they were all spread over there. As a matter of fact, there was... Goth Fifth Army, he only had 12 divisions, and he occupied a line of about over 40 miles, which is a great deal. A division usually occupies a couple of miles, but he was spread out. He had no reserves, nothing at all.
Did you know that at the time?
We knew it, yes. Oh, yeah, we knew it. We could see it. We knew it, oh, yes.
Were you surprised yourself at the conditions at the front?
Indeed, I was. I thought it was going to go into trenches there with all the mud and sludge and all that sort of thing, but they were in this open place there. I mean, there was a village on the left. There was nothing in there. That was all destroyed. It was a funny place, this Gignecourt. It lay at the bottom of an escarpment. You know, you could be if you was on the top of this escarpment, you could look down in the village. And it all, and the land ran up into a long, long ridge before where the Germans came down on this 21st of March.
So if I'm right in thinking this, the village was out of view from the Germans, from where the Germans
were. No, the Germans could see the village. If they came down the hill, they could see the village, and they'd see the escarpment at the back of it,
I see. Oh,
there was,
I see.
An escarpment behind a sunken road.
On the British
as well.
Side of the lines. I'm with you. Okay. You have described that there was no trench system there. Would you say that the defences that were there had been long established, or were they new, just been dug?
Well, I don't think they were long established, I'm sure. I don't know the history of the situation, but as I say, it was a piece of land at the front.